This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The North Carolina Association of Educators calls it a day of action. North Carolina teachers will rally tomorrow to call for better conditions for themselves and their students. An estimated 32 school districts have canceled classes in preparation. Last year's rally involved an estimated 20,000 teachers and supporters. On today's program, we'll take a look at the way teachers organize to bring attention to the needs of their classrooms since they are prohibited from joining a union. Joining us today, Turquoise Parker, a fifth grade reading and writing social studies teacher at Glenn Elementary School in Durham, also vice president of the Durham Association of Educators. Turquoise, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Brian Prophet, a teacher at Hillside High School, current president of the Durham Association of Educators. Hello, Brian.
Good to be here, Frank.
Good to have you here. Turquoise, let's talk about, you know, sort of what it is to be a teacher, your, you know, the struggles that teachers are having, and why you would take a day off to protest and rally to bring attention to these.
Absolutely. So it's, for me, it's a thing I've always known. Grew up with a single mom, and she had three kids. So my sister and I are 14 years apart. My brother and I are 9 years apart. And she didn't really do babysitters much. I didn't really like going to babysitters much. She was extra involved in her in the union. She was her local affiliate president and on the board, building rep, and I was always there with her. So going to these types of massive actions, going to legislative offices, going to union meetings, going to building rep meetings, going to her students' homes to make sure they have everything they need to be able to make it from day to day was a norm for me. So when I graduated from college from the greatest institution, North Carolina Central University, I didn't even have a choice. My mom was like, I already turned your paperwork in. I already made sure I found out who your president was. You know him. You saw him at convention.
Mm-hmm.
You already know. Yeah. You don't know who your building rep is? Find out. So it was a natural for me. Now as an educator, it's no option continuously. Like, it is the only way. And even in the, you know, hours we have leading up to tomorrow's massive action, I'm still seeing reasons why I have no choice to go tomorrow, because this is literally about saving lives for not just our kids, but their families, for ourselves, for the families, for our families, and for our future. It's just literally no option.
What was your mother telling you about why this was so important? Obviously, it was taking time away from her family. She was also busy taking care of the students and, as you say, making sure they had what they needed. So she was definitely focused on them. But the criticism is, look, focus on the kids. Why are you spending all this time rallying and doing things outside the classroom when those kids need you? If you really cared about them, you'd be in the classroom.
I love that question. I do. I think no one can tell you how important participation in an action like tomorrow is if they haven't actually been in your shoes, and experienced the things that we experience as public school educators day in and day out. It is literally, my union president says it every single week, it is literally the hardest and most important job in the world. We educate all professions. None of us would be where we are without educators. And so there is no option. We can't do our job unless our bus drivers get our kids to school. And if our bus drivers aren't paid at the rate that they should be paid, if they don't have the health insurance that they should have to make sure that their bodies are healthy, if they can't take care of themselves and have to do different odds and ends to make ends meet, it's no one's happy, no one's healthy, and therefore no one is growing. And if we truly want to grow a world that I definitely imagine being incredibly amazing, it's not going to happen unless we get ourselves in the streets and get into the offices and build relationships with the folks who make these laws.
I think you point directly to the tension that is inherent in my question, and the way that gets asked over and over again in the public marketplace of ideas, which is that you are committed, that teachers, we hope, are committed to the mission, and mission-driven people are then asked to work for nothing. You went to the best institution in the world, North Carolina Central. That prepares you for the best jobs in the world, the best paying jobs in the world, and you chose this one, and I'm guessing your pay is not as good as you could have gotten had you chosen another career.
Today is payday, actually. Woke up this morning. My husband and I are both public school educators. And so we both woke up this morning and saw available balance. And, you know, teachers, educators, public school workers cannot run any faster. We cannot sleep any less. We cannot give any more out of our already non-existent bank accounts. We cannot give any more. But yet still we are. Mm. And it is super disappointing. You know, I could have chosen to do a lot of things. My husband and I thought about moving to Dubai to teach. We thought about moving to Houston when there was a big recruitment fair. We love Durham. We have been here almost half of our lives at this point. We love Durham. We could have gone anywhere. All of us could go anywhere. But every child in every school in every state deserves a quality education. And the person standing in front of them, the person driving that bus, the person scooping those beans out in the cafeteria, the person cleaning the floors, the person cleaning the bathrooms, the person answering the phone, putting in data, leading that entire building, every single one of us deserve living wages, health insurance, and the list goes on. So though I don't, you know, appreciate at all, you know, this like smack in the face salary, I don't have a choice. Teaching is me. I mean, I got in trouble as a kid all the time for playing teaching and drawing on the walls, drawing on everything. I've always wanted to do this, like always. There's no other job for me. And I'm going to fight until it can be something that I can live with.
Brian Proffitt, what are some of the particulars? There was a rally last year. You're doing it again this year. What are we looking for this year?
Well, I mean, I think in the big picture way, what we're looking for is the schools and the communities that our students deserve, right? Like Turquoise alluded to it, but I feel actually it feels irresponsible to start talking about this without noting that a young person was killed in Durham last night. And that's one of ours. And that's one of our coworkers' kids, and that's one of our kids' families, right? Like, and as educators, we feel that deeply every single day, and we know that our kids deserve better than that. I think the other thing around this sort of frame of what it is that we deserve, you mentioned purpose-driven people are often underpaid and overworked. Also women, right, mm-hmm. are underpaid and overworked. And so there's no coincidence that this is a women-centered profession, and it's one that's like routinely economically exploited. And there's this expectation that people have that what a good teacher is someone who comes and does a home visit at someone's house every night, or someone who puts in the 5 hours extra, you know, every night to do this. Like, I don't know a teacher that works less than 50 hours a week, right? Also, all other educators are doing all kinds of extra supplementary things. And that's what the expectation is. And what people don't get is that every moment we're grading your kid's paper or making this lesson plan, we're not hanging out with our own kids and our own nephews and nieces and our own families or going for a run or cooking ourselves a good meal. And so we got to a point, right, really starting in 2008, that the decay in the investment in public schools and the indignities with which we were being subjected to just had kind of reached a limit, right? Like, we'd been in a state where there was a, you know, moderate consensus in investment in public schools for 20, 30 years, right, relative to the rest of the South. And then in 2008, we had the audacity to elect a Black president. And the right was like, no, we're not going to do that, right? And so, like they've done all across the country, they started attacking public schools, right? In addition to attacking everything else that our kids and their students need. And so we did everything, right? We wrote emails. We went to people's offices. We had legislative meetings. We made phone calls. We sat in. We marched from Durham to Raleigh and got arrested in the streets, Frank. What else do we voted? What else do we have to do, right? And so last year, you know, it was like we've done all the things, right? And it's we can't just keep doing those same things. Our kids are worth more than that. Our kid, like, if our lesson plans failed every single day over and over, we would do something different. And then our homies in West Virginia, right? Like, our coworkers up there really set this thing off. And they sort of set a spark, right? That everybody began to say, well, we're like them. Why can't, you know, a lot of us at the organizers that Mark Johnson wants to decry, like, we get our lessons from the Chicago Teachers Union and a really powerful, you know, movement of educators that's been building in the country for the last 10 years. But the spark for most people last year was West Virginia, because it wasn't Chicago. It wasn't Detroit. It wasn't New York. It wasn't some union stronghold. It was people just like us. And so what we had to do last year was really defeat hopelessness and fear. We had to say, you know, people, we would go into buildings and say, hey, y'all, put in a personal day. And people would look at us and say, am I allowed to put in a personal day? Like, people were asking us if they were allowed to put in a personal day. Frank, this is crazy. We raise people's children. Right?
And it's called a personal day. You should have it. Although you're docked $50 for doing it, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you lose $50 to go pay the substitute for your personal day. Mm-hmm. How many of you listening to me, when you take a day off, have to pay $50 of your salary to pay your replacement?
That's right.
I see the hands
That's right.
raising.
And so yeah, there's none out there.
Raise
right?
a hand.
So for us, last year was really about saying we're not going to be afraid anymore. And we're not going to be hopeless anymore. We're not going to accept that this is the reality that we have. And we can see other people like us winning, so we're going to win too. And so we took the momentum from last year. And I've been in demonstrations of 500,000 people before. I've never been in a moment that was as powerful as what happened in the streets on May 16th. It was literally the entire state. It was the mountains to the coast. It was multi-generational. It was multiracial. It was the entire state of North Carolina. And that jack doesn't go back in the box, right? So after that, it becomes, you know, let's get ourselves organized over the summer. And we did trainings of hundreds of people. Then it was move into the election so we can defeat the privatizers. Then it was train some folks, you know, our folks some more, right? And so really what we're saying now is, like, last year was about changing the sort of getting ourselves out of the hole and back to zero, right? Getting away from the hopelessness and fear that had us crippled for so long. But now that we hit ground zero, right, it's time to take some steps forward. Right. And so what we're saying this year is we want some things. We're not content to just voice our discontent. We want to come here on Wednesday and say, and we've been asking lawmakers for the last week, go on record. What is your position on our 5 points? And right now we have 58 legislators in the state that have gone on record saying what is their response to our 5 demands. That's not something we've seen from the movement of educators in this state, right? So we're making incredible progress here.
Brian Prophet is a teacher at Hillside High School and a current president of the Durham Association of Educators. Also talking to Turquoise Parker, who's a teacher at Glen Elementary School in Durham and vice president of the Durham Association of Educators. And Brian, you said you did everything you could, everything except create a union, because that is something you couldn't do. And joining the conversation now is David Zondervan, a professor of history at North Carolina State University, also the department head. And David, I want to talk to you about the history of organizing. You know, Brian has obviously, and Turquoise both, talked eloquently about the power of organizing and why you do it. But the state of North Carolina has never been friendly to that kind of organizing, particularly unions, right?
Yeah, although let me quickly correct the record that you can organize unions That's in right. North Carolina. And in fact,
public teachers union?
Yes, mm-hmm. But they don't have bargaining rights. And that's an important distinction. I mean, I'm not trying to minimize that.
Yeah.
But people in the state sometimes, and picking up on what Brian and Turquoise have both said, getting the message to teachers or other workers that you do have the right to organize a union under the First Amendment right of association.
It's
and
a
in
human
fact,
right.
One of the things that, yeah. that the teachers, I think, have done a really good job the past couple of years is they call their organization a union. Yeah. Whereas 10 or 20 years ago, they always said, well, we're the Educators Association. And I think that kind of union consciousness is really important. But you're right, Frank, that the big barrier is in this state. There's a law that says no public employee, including myself, I'm also an employee of the state of North Carolina teaching at the state university, we can't have a collectively bargained contract. So that does defang unions. It weakens them. It's quite deliberate. And I know that a number of the teachers, as well as other public employees, have been talking for a very long time about trying to repeal that law. And it's been a long struggle, and maybe someday we'll see that. But you're right. That's just part of a bigger story.
Well, you know that story, and you've taught it, and you've written about that bigger story of how it was
sure.
we got here. But I want to stay in this moment for
sure.
a minute before I go back. What is changing? Because as you said, teachers' associations had been formed and shied away from the word union, and now they're using it boldly and succeeding, by the way. So in places like West Virginia and great success, if you look at the election cycle and perhaps attribute some of that to what happened last May, what's changing, David?
I think, again, picking up on what the teachers themselves have said, I think two things are changing. One is a sense of just a breaking point. A lot of teachers around the country in this state and elsewhere, in many other states where there's not much bargaining rights. Again, as Brian said, think West Virginia, not Chicago or New York, have just felt enough is enough. We you keep asking us to do more with less, and at some point we can't do more with less. At some point we shouldn't have to work 3 jobs to put a roof over the head of ourselves and our children. We deserve a kind of decent middle-class wage the way other people with our education levels and experience have. I think it's also a generational shift. I mean, again, looking in this room, these folks are a tad younger than I am, maybe more than a tad. And I think that's great. I think teachers in their 20s and 30s and 40s are often leading these movements and saying, you know, we don't want it to be for the next 20 or 30 years of our career the way it's been for the first 5 or 10. We don't want salaries that don't even pay the rent. We don't want to be told there's no money for a school counselor. We don't want to be told use a textbook that's 30 years old where all the science in it is outdated. So I think that's true also, a generational shift. And, of course, we're seeing that in the politics of this country as well.
We're talking about organizing teachers today on The State of Things. David Zondermann's a professor of history at North Carolina State. Also talking with Brian Proffitt, president of the Durham Association of Educators, and Turquoise Parker, who's vice president of that association and a fifth grade teacher at Glenn Elementary. But what about unions? Now, to take a little bit of the deep history, because, you know, why would anyone not want to use that word? What is North Carolina's relationship with labor organizing, right? And why is that word now? Because all of those needs have always been, you know, part of what teachers have demanded and needed. Perhaps sympathy has shifted in legislatures over time. But it seems to me the appetite or openness to organizing is changing in a way that for the state of North Carolina had always been closed, a closed mind about organizing, particularly unions.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. For decades, if not more than a century, North Carolina has been known as being particularly hostile ground to labor organizing. And I think that's driven partly by an economic model that you know, if we keep unions out, we'll attract business, although the business that gets attracted is often low-wage business. And the other thing is if we keep unions out, we keep out organizations that often mobilize with more progressive forces. And if you're a conservative North Carolina businessman or politician, that's why you keep unions out, because they're going to organize with your opponents politically as well.
Is there anything about the fact that we have not had unions in our consciousness, really, for a long time? I can remember growing up as a young man coming of age, there was always a strike. There was always, the auto workers were on strike, the aircraft workers were on strike somewhere. I haven't heard about a strike, except for recently, teacher strikes, right? Very recently, in a long time. So unions aren't on my mind, and they were excoriated also over that period, particularly in the 70s and then, of course, the 80s, damned by Ronald Reagan. Is it that perhaps unions have gained some of their luster or lost some of the tarnish that they had in those earlier decades?
I think, that's what we're beginning to see. I mean, time will tell. But over the past year or two, I think you're right. We are seeing certainly the teachers just in New England over the past couple of weeks. The Stop and Shop grocery chain had a big strike, and the 31,000 union workers that walked out got the contract they wanted. So we are seeing, and the data shows this. I've just seen data out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The number of workers on strike in the past 2 years is up from where it was 10 years ago. Now, it's not where it was in the days of the mass strikes of the 30s or 40s or wherever. But it, and you know, time will tell whether we're seeing a long-term upsurge or just this short-term one.
Turquoise Parker, I've given you just 30 seconds, but what are you expecting to happen tomorrow and what are you expecting to grow from tomorrow?
Lots. Actually, one of the things that you said made me think about something that I'm really looking forward to seeing is the continued revitalization of our union, because it can be, teaching is such a hard job. Being a public school worker is such a hard job, and it can make you feel helpless, hopeless, nothing's ever going to change. And so we are continuously, as Brian said earlier, defeating hopelessness. We're continuously to show that, no, the power is always with the people. And you, this is you. You don't let these folks tell you what to do. They cannot be elected unless we elect them. And so kind of hoping to just simply educate educators.
That's tomorrow. Your job. Turquoise Parker, fifth grade reading, writing, and social studies teacher at Glenn Elementary in Durham, vice president of the Durham Association of Educators. Brian Proffitt is a teacher at Hillside High School and the current president of the Durham Association of Educators. And David Zondermann, alumni distinguished professor of history at North Carolina State University, department head there as well. Thank all of you for being on our program.
Thank you for having us.
You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a new documentary tells the story of five women fresh out of prison who work and live on a farm in Alamance County. Stay tuned.